Part 1. Scotland. Chapter 1. Snow crowned the ridges of High Glen and lay on the wooded slopes in pearly patches, like jewellery on the bosom of a green silk dress. In the valley bottom, a hasty stream dodged between icy rocks. The bitter wind that howled inland from the North Sea brought flurries of sleet and hail. Walking to church in the morning, the Mac Ash twins, Malachi and Esther, followed a zigzag trail along the eastern slope of the glen. Malachi, known as Mac, wore a plaid cape and tweed breeches, but his legs were bare below the knee, and his feet, without stockings, froze in his wooden clogs. However, he was young and hot-blooded, and he hardly noticed the cold. This was not the shortest way to church, but High Glen always thrilled him. The high mountainsides, the quiet, mysterious woods, and the laughing water formed a landscape familiar to his soul. He had watched a pair of eagles raise three sets of nestlings here. Like the eagles, he had stolen the layered salmon from the teeming stream, and, like the deer, he had hidden in the trees, silent and still, when the gamekeepers came. The laird was a woman, Lady Hallam, a widow with a daughter. The land on the far side of the mountain belonged to Sir George Jameson, and it was a different world. Engineers had torn great holes in the mountainsides. Man-made hills of slag disfigured the valley. Massive wagons loaded with coal ploughed the muddy road, and the stream was black with dust. There the twins lived, in a village called Hugh, a long row of low stone houses marching uphill like a staircase. They were male and female versions of the same image. Both had fair hair blackened by coal dust and striking pale green eyes. Both were short and broad-backed, with strongly muscled arms and legs. Both were opinionated and argumentative. Arguments were a family tradition. Their father had been an all-round nonconformist, eager to disagree with the government, the church, or any other authority. Their mother had worked for Lady Hallam before her marriage, and like many servants, she identified with the upper class. One bitter winter, when the pit had closed for a month after an explosion, Father had died of the black spit, the cough that killed so many coal miners, and Mother got pneumonia and followed him within a few weeks. But the arguments went on, usually on Saturday nights in Mrs. Wheel's parlour, the nearest thing to a tavern in the village of Hugh. The estate workers and the crofters took Mother's view. They said the king was appointed by God, and that was why people had to obey him. The coal miners had heard newer ideas. John Locke and other philosophers said a government's authority could come only from the consent of the people. This theory appealed to Mac. Few miners in Hugh could read, but Mac's mother could, and he had pestered her to teach him. She had taught both her children, ignoring the jibes of her husband, who said she had ideas above her station. At Mrs. Wheel's, Mac was called on to read aloud from the Times, the Edinburgh Advertiser, and political journals such as the radical North Britain. The papers were always weeks out of date, sometimes months, but the men and women of the village listened avidly to long speeches reported verbatim, satirical diatribes, and accounts of strikes, protests, and riots. It was after a Saturday night argument at Mrs. Wheel's that Mac had written the letter. None of the miners had ever written a letter before, and there had been long consultations about every word. It was addressed to Caspar Gordonson, a London lawyer who wrote articles in the journals ridiculing the government. The letter had been entrusted to Davy Patch, the one-eyed peddler, for posting, and Mac had wondered if it would ever reach its destination. The reply had come yesterday, and it was the most exciting thing that had ever happened to Mac. It would change his life beyond recognition, he thought. It might set him free. As far back